Good morning, Oregon. I'm Finn J.D. John, finn@offbeatoregon.com. And this is the Offbeat Oregon History Podcast. Thank you for loading me down and queuing me up, and I hope you enjoy this show. Today I'm going to tell you the story about a smuggler, but not an illegal smuggler. You see, in Gold Rush era Oregon, the most skilled miners were probably the Chinese, but they were in constant danger. To avoid being robbed, they entrusted their gold to professional couriers who masqueraded as penniless vagabonds. Basically, legal smugglers. This is a story from the life of one of them, a man we know only as Chang. The story was first published on March 5th of 2011. Here we go. Chang was on his way to a southern Oregon mining outpost one evening during the heyday of the California gold rush when he saw the wagon. It was slumped down in the road, hunched over a broken axle. But it obviously had only recently been abandoned. Its canvas cover was still in fine shape. It would make a good shelter for the night, he thought. He pulled open the flap. A terrified scream rang out. Peering inside, Chang saw a starving, frightened woman holding a tiny newborn baby. She soon calmed down when she saw that her visitor was just a mild, unassuming Chinese man dressed in rags. Chang did not look in the least bit dangerous. Didn't look like much of anything, really. That was the secret of his success, and probably the reason he was still alive. Chang opened his bag and started pulling things out. Food, of course, was the first order of business. But Chang also had a wide assortment of herbs and extracts used for traditional Chinese medicine, so he brewed up a strengthening decoction for the woman and her baby. They would need their strength to get out of the predicament they were in. Their wagon axle had broken a week before, and the woman's husband had taken the horses and set out to find help. There had been no sign of him since. Why he had taken both horses instead of just one wasn't clear. Perhaps he wanted to avoid drawing attention to the wagon with his little family inside. In any case, they couldn't wait for him. So as soon as the woman had her strength back, Chang guided her to the nearest town. He stayed just long enough to make sure she was safe there, staying with the local stabler's family while waiting and hoping for her husband to be found. Then Chang disappeared into the night like a phantom. The last thing he wanted was attention of any kind, good or bad. If he stayed in town, he could count on both. Gratitude for saving a life mixed with suspicion that he'd had something to do with the husband's disappearance. It didn't matter. Any kind of publicity could be deadly for him. Chang was a courier for the frontier Chinese community. During the gold rush, as many as 20% of the miners in southern Oregon and northern California were Chinese. They worked the rejected tailings of less patient miners, getting surprising amounts of gold out of them. They tried to be as inconspicuous as they could, and they lived in little segregated camps in the field, hoping a combination of invisibility and numbers would help protect them from drunks and bullies and robbers, of which there were many. And they needed all the protection they could get. In frontier American society, the law offered them almost nothing. In theory, it treated all alike, but in practice, it covered Chinese immigrants only barely and in the most egregious cases. A murder here, a robbery there, few non-Chinese people cared, and that included sheriffs and judges. So Chinese miners couldn't just pack up their gold dust and ride to Portland to buy things with it. They were too tempting a target. To get their gold out of the field and buy things they needed, Chinese herbs, dried exotic seafoods and vegetables, even opium, they turned to professionals like Chang. Chang was part of an elite group of what you might call blockade runners. In effect, he was a smuggler, just not an illegal one. Here's how he operated. On a visit to a camp, Chang would pick up the miners' gold and bring it to one of the two major Chinatowns, San Francisco and Portland. There, the gold would be handled by trusted shopkeepers, divided out on different miners' accounts, sent home to family members in China, and used to buy supplies. Chang would then return with the supplies. It was on such a trip that he came across the starving woman. To deliver such valuable cargo took a special kind of skill. Quote, "He was very cautious," Chang's descendant, Dave Chang, told magazine writer Robert Joe Stout in an interview. "And never wore good clothing or let on in any way that he was carrying thousands of dollars concealed among his rags." The younger Chang, a San Francisco resident, told Stout his ancestor made a point of not paying cash for things along the way. He'd trade labor for what he needed, like a 1930s hobo, working as a deckhand to earn passage on a ship, or shoveling out someone's stables in exchange for permission to sleep in them for the night. And Dave Chang's memories of family stories are probably the best documentation that we'll ever find of the exploits of his remarkable ancestor and his colleagues. The fires that broke out after the 1907 earthquake hit San Francisco's Chinatown especially hard, and most of their records are now lost. We still don't even have basic information about how many Chinese people there were on the West Coast, or what they were dying from. It's possible that entire pogroms were carried out in the hills of gold country and no one knows about it today. It's also possible, almost certain in fact, that many more deeds of heroism and compassion done by Chinese pioneers have been utterly lost to history. As for the woman in the wagon, her fate has been mostly lost to history too. But through discreet inquiries, Chang was able to learn that her husband never reappeared. She finally gave up and moved with her baby back to Tennessee with her parents. Sources for this story include works by Robert Cho Stout, Sylvia Sun Minnick, and Kenneth Owens. Well, that's our show for today. This podcast is part of Offbeat Oregon History, a public history resource for the state we love. In addition to the podcast, it includes a weekly newspaper column, a series of live history shows, a daily RSS feed to catch on your smartphone newsreader, a Facebook page, a couple other minor components too. Photographs and other visual goodies that go with today's show are on offbeatoregon.com, where you will also find full citations to the sources for this story. The podcast is covered under a Creative Commons license. For details, see offbeatoregon.com/cc. Our theme music is by the Atlas String Band, atlasstringband.com, and was written by Carmen Ficarra. I do Offbeat Oregon History for fun and to learn things, so I don't jeopardize that by selling advertising or asking for donations. However, if you enjoy Offbeat Oregon History and you'd like to support it, you can always pick up a copy of my book. If you enjoy this show, I can pretty much guarantee you'll enjoy the book. It's called Wicked Portland. It was published by the History Press in 2012. And they're available at community bookstores, or you can order a signed copy from the store link at offbeatoregon.com. Sells for $20. Finally, if you're ever in Corvallis, drop me a line. Maybe we can grab a cup of coffee and talk history. I'm at finn@offbeatoregon.com. Our next show will be coming your way around 6 a.m. tomorrow morning, and until then, go out and fill up the rest of today with good stuff. Bye now.